All right, let's start. So again, I'm going to be going through the Tibetan. I don't mean to, overwhelm people, and you don't have to worry about the Tibetan. I just, I like, if I were you, I would like to know it's coming from a real source, an authentic source. And there are people in the room who I have hopes for becoming translators or. And I feel like it's my responsibility to pass it on the way I was taught it. But you can tune it out, okay, if it's overwhelming for you. So, okay, I don't mean to overwhelm you. I just think it's a big blessing to do it in the original, okay? All right. Then we were talking about the idea of Kadampa. We were into a subject of the four wonderful qualities of learning this particular spiritual presentation. There are thousands of different spiritual presentations in many different faiths, and this is just one of them, called the Lamrim, or the Steps of the Path to Enlightenment. And it is advertised as a spiritual method which could get you to enlightenment. It's advertised as an instruction book to enlightenment, step by step. It's called step by step, like a lawnmower manual. Before the Lama goes ahead and starts into the actual Lamrim, the steps of the path, which are maybe you could say 20 or 30 realizations that are helpful to reach in order to become enlightened. Before we go into that, it's traditional to sell the Lamrim itself. Okay, so like you're not going to be interested in attending the whole teachings if you don't think it's going to do anything for you. And so it's traditional at the beginning that you talk up the Lamrim, the idea of Lamrim, the idea of a step-by-step instruction book to enlightenment. Okay, so traditionally, they go through explaining four beautiful qualities of this spiritual presentation, Lamrim. And we finished one and a half. The first one was, what was that? Huh? Yeah. Gelmeditemba means you will, there are. We and our sister organization, TBRC, we have scanned 8 million pages of spiritual, Tibetan spiritual books. And that's not, I don't know what percent that is, maybe half. So in 8 million pages, if you study the Lamrim, you will come to see that there's not a single contradiction within those 8 million pages. And as you get more mature and as you study more and more and as you go through your life, you will come to appreciate a system which is really watered, airtight, waterproof, airtight. And it's just tight. And it's logical. The whole thing makes sense. The whole system makes sense and every part of it makes sense. And no part of it contradicts any other part of it. And as you get older, you begin to appreciate any system. Which is coherent, you know. As we start to question science itself or banking systems or the idea of democracy or, you know, as we start to question these systems which have served us and which may be showing false lines, then it's comforting to have a system which is coherent, completely coherent and applicable to your life, which is the second great quality. Okay, tamgatushama. Every part of it is immediately applicable to your life. Okay, and then we talked about a spiritual stage that you reach where you're sitting in a teaching, and they go through 2 hours of, scripture, and every sentence, every time the teacher speaks a sentence, you think, oh. I could use that with so-and-so who bugs me. Or I could use that with with my partner, on my partner, or you know, there's a state of bless. It's a blessing, right? That you can reach where everything a teacher says is something immediately relevant to your own personal challenges and your own personal goals, right? And that's called Kadampa. So we were talking about that concept of how do you reach the state in your yoga practice or meditation practice where everything seems to be a teaching that you could use for the problems in your own life and the things that you want to reach in your own life, okay? So that's called Kadampa. We were talking about that. And now we continue, okay? Chudi tsamla doe tse suram gang shel chena nang nyamlen tu dil tu pa shik on. So you can be, he's continuing a line of thought about you could see where everything you heard is not only relevant to your life, but if you study the Lamrim carefully, you will have within your mind all the steps of the path, and you will know where any particular thing you hear. Like Jenny said some inspiring things in the yoga class today, which were inspiring for me. And then because I've gone through this training, I can put her statements in the context of the whole trip to enlightenment, the whole journey to enlightenment over a person's life. I can say, oh, she's talking about step 14 or something. And that fits beautifully there. Okay? So he says, Chundun Samla Dowetse. In the monastery, we're required to do a lot of. What are the Yoga Sutra? What are the Kriyas? What's the verse? Swadhisthana. Swadhyaya. Okay. In the Yoga Sutra, it's called Swadhyaya. Okay. It's the last of the Kriyas, I think. Niyama. It's the last of the Niyamas. What are the first ones? Shaucha, Santosha, Tapa, Pranaya, Ishvara Pranidana, Pranidana. So Swadhyaya, people misunderstand. They say self-study. Swa means self, adhyaya means study. Then it's just a word that means to memorize scripture and to learn scripture. They just didn't know the definite, what it refers to. I don't know, it's like saying laundromat means to clean a guy named Matt or something. Because, no, they took it apart and they didn't understand it. So Swadhyaya means... Swadhyaya means to learn and commit scripture to memory so that it's part of your consciousness, you see. So in the monastery, we do a lot of memorizing. By the way, memorizing is a skill that you can get better at, okay? Like if you start doing it, you can do it more and more. And it's useful because when you're meditating, you can go through the library and you can... pull out. The whole essence of memorization, I'm not trying to sell memorization because nobody will do it anyway, but we're in the monastery, the first thing we're required to memorize is a teaching by Maitreya, who is the next Buddha to come on this planet. So I have in my head somewhere 75 pages of Maitreya, you know, and it talks to me sometimes. You see, Maitreya comes up in my mind sometimes in the way that rock and roll songs come up in your mind sometimes. So he just starts talking, you know, hello cowgirl in the city, like that. And then, you know, and it's nice to have Maitreya talking in your head. So anyway, he says, Chudan Samla, you could just be reciting something. Droid say, Sungrab Kang Shel Chena, Nyamnan Du Dil Tupa Shi Ong. So you can be like reciting something, and you hit a line, and then suddenly you will know where it fits in a lifetime of spiritual practice, like Jenny's comments before the yoga class today. Okay. Tana satsakang nangi shokyar chik nyepa sunche kyang rangi nyam nangi mikodu nun cho cho ong. It means there are special little how do you call them? They're like sheds or something, like they're bigger than a shed, and they're made of like adobe walls, and they're like little storerooms, okay? And they're called satsakang. Say satsakang. So satsakang means it's like little recyclable bins around Tibet. There are little recyclable bins around Tibet. They are little buildings, tiny buildings. And when you have a painting, a religious painting, or you have a statue or something like that, and the arm breaks off, and your dog eats it or something, or something like that, the painting fell apart, and it's too old to use anymore, it's considered bad luck to throw it in the garbage. So you take it to a satsakang, and you just put it there. You just set it there. It's like a blessed place. Nobody will step on it. Nobody will abuse it. And it can rest there. Okay? So, or if you have a scripture, see what happens with these scriptures, which are, they're this shape because they used to be palm leaves, right? And they kept the format after paper was invented. But they don't bind them. So it's common that you would hand out pieces to your students. Here, memorize that by tomorrow. And then the kid forgets to give it back to you, and you forget to get it back from him. And then pretty soon the scripture is rendered unusable because every third page is missing. Then you would take that, you would buy a new one. They don't even use the word buy with holy objects. They say ransom. You ransom a new one. And then you take the old one and you throw the pages in the satsakang. You see? It's like your old ACI notebooks that are gathering dust on your shelf. Okay, so he says Tana means you could even get to a point where you could go to a satsakang. Satsa means those little clay images, right, that the FPMT overproduces. And no, I mean, because Lama Sopa tells them you have to make 10,000 in 6 years or something. But if they break, they break easily. So you take them and throw them in a satsakang. So the place is called a satsa repository. Meaning broken satsa repository. Shokya, you can go there, you can pick up one page of scripture at random, you know, an old page of scripture at random. Kyang rangi nyamlangi mekodu nun cho cho ong. And you can add that to your toolkit. You can add it to your spiritual, daily spiritual practice. There will be enough information on one page to become a useful addition to your own personal practice, okay? It happened to me when we got the place on 6th Street in New York. I was walking down the street, on the sidewalk on 6th Street, on the north side, headed east. And there was a page of scripture there, Tibetan scripture on the ground. And it was a sadhana for Dukar. It means the deity of the white umbrella. And I kept it, and I read it, and it became part of, you know, it becomes part of your practice, okay? All right, that's Kadampa. Got it? All right. Kowa ngar chungukap gumbo lingkor ki tsasa kan nangi shokar chigla tepe. And then Pabongka Rinpoche says, when I was a child, I was doing, lingkor means I was doing circumambulations of the monastery. They do that for exercise, okay? Especially older monks. They walk around the monastery in the evening and they gossip. Okay. Shilatepe. Then I saw a page on the ground that had flown, the wind had blown it out of a satsakang, out of a store shed. And I picked it up. And it turned out to be a quotation from Gyaltso Kelsang Gyatso, which is the seventh, His Holiness, the seventh Dalai Lama, who was a very great tantric practitioner, okay, very famous. Gyatso Sungur, And it was from his spiritual songs. Okay, it was a page from his spiritual songs. And it said, Tak chung ki pungwa shunu te, dang deng ki medo chik ne chik, yu tsam na dor len che pa tong, pen di dang tsun pe dung ki lu, nik tu ki kewa mangbo shik, sem ma tak rang ki nang su ki, ke chik la da, nyengyur, ke chik la da nyengyur. That's a problem with the text. Anyway, somebody put in an extra syllable. Ke chik la da nyengyur tong. Lo tembe dokpo nye ma nye. Okay, so that was there was a little poetry there. Okay. Ta chung ki pungwa shunu de. This a bee or a fly. Okay, like we call it a bee, all right? A bee from Tak Chung, a young bee from Tak Chung. Dang Dengi Metal lands on a Dang Dengi Metal, means like a saffron colored flower. And he flies from one to another. Like if you watch a bee, I have bees and I have zinnias. And they like the zinnias. They come for the zinnias. And they don't like roses. I don't know. I guess what they like is not in roses. But they go and they land and they do something. I don't know what they're doing. Then they fly and they go to another one. And then they go and they fly another. And the, what do you call the? The birds. The little nunik birds. Hummingbird. Yeah. they go like, and then they go like, and they... And they don't. So he's describing a bee like that. Yu tsam la dorlen chepatong. You can see how they grab a flower and then they just like, it's like throwing somebody's leg off your chest today. You know, that was a weird experience to have your leg thrown by somebody. But so they look all interested and then they go, ah, not this one, and they fly to the next flower, right? Pe di dan tsumba. There's a case in our life which is similar to that insect. Nowadays, in the days of dark, okay, nikdu means these are considered dark days from one point of view, in that the teachings of this Buddha are scheduled to get lost in the world within the next. I don't know, let's call it the next 2,000 years. They will die in this world. The teachings on enlightenment will disappear from this world. This is called the bad times, okay? These are the late times in the history of these teachings and this planet, okay? And a lot of people in these dark days, their minds are impure. And then we can see that someone that we thought was our friend becomes in a few days our worst enemy. This is very common with boyfriends and girlfriends, right? You can, you know, someone you thought was the dearest person in your life, once they say they don't want to go out with you, is now the worst person that you know, okay? Like, whether they changed or not is another question. But we can see inconsistency in people in these times, right? You don't know who's your friend and who's your enemy. Lo tembe dropo nge manye. I have not found in my life a companion or a friend that I could really put all my trust in or all my faith in, you know? Of course, that's the person's own karma, right? They haven't been faithful or loyal or consistent with their friends, and therefore they only meet that kind of people, okay? Why it happens, we understand, right? He's not criticizing humanity. He's just making a comment on himself, really. Okay? Che dupa kebu dingi ngepa mepa ngepa mepe ngepa la jar chochore. But when I read that, those lines, it occurred to me that it fit perfectly into the teachings on the people from medium capacity, right? Where you discuss the faults or the problems of this cycle of life called samsara. And it says things are uncertain. You know, things change. Friends become enemies, enemies become friends in a few months, right? It happens with your enemies also, right? People that you thought were incorrigibly against you, oftentimes when you open your heart and you talk to them, then you turn out to be your best friends, right? So it goes both ways. But anyway, life is unstable, right? That's our fault, but that's the way it is. So what he's saying, though, is that even as a child, picking up a single page of scripture that flew out of a garbage bin, right, he realized he could apply it to directly into that part of the whole flow to Buddhahood. Okay. Tetar ka dang gongdel tamje ne yike na chi kyan dor du dor du me par damga tu chaw tu pala kadam she jate. Now he's explaining the word kadam, kadampa. Okay, we did it already. I did it as an introduction. Now he got to the actual explanation. He says, that kind of experience where you can pick up any scripture, whether it's by the Buddha or some commentary, and you can take a few, even just a few syllables out of it, and see that none of it is dor de mepa means, do you know the definition of samaya? We got to talk about samaya, right? Maybe we're going to, that might be the subject at the next great retreat teachings. We're not sure yet. But the definition of samaya is damsik, right, in Tibetan, is dordamirunga. Okay, dordamirunga means you can never, what do you call it? Disavow. That's a good word, right? Disavow. Okay, you can never disavow it. It's the definition of a samaya, or a pledge, a sacred pledge. So he's saying he doesn't use it for pledges. He uses it for any few lines out of any true sacred book are dordamirunga. You can never discount them or disavow them. If you are in the right frame of mind, even Time Magazine and even the New York Post can teach you something, okay? It can be some kind of, we call it not just teach you something, but it can be a message from divine source, okay? And then he says, and that's what it means to say kadampa, okay? That's the meaning of kadampa. Then he's going to quote something to back him up, right? In Buddhism, You normally support a statement in two different ways. You quote an authority, and then you prove it logically, especially in the case of someone that you're talking with who doesn't accept that authority. Okay, so he's gonna tell a story. Jay Bagni Chembo, the Mahatma. Who's he talking about? Who's the Mahatma? That's the Tibetan translation of Mahatma. If you were, you know, Pabong Rinpoche, who would be Mahatma for you? Jetsun Kapa, okay? The teacher of His Holiness, the First Dalai Lama, who started our lineage, right? He invented this vest. I don't know why. Kind of weird. He put the blue thing on there and everything. Okay. Jay Dagny Chembu, Kachu Rinchen Pel. So he had a student called Kachu Rinchen Pel. Rinchen Pel is a personal monk's name. Kachupa means it was like a geshe in the old days. It was like a little bit less than a geshe. And it meant someone who had mastered 10 different subjects. Kachu means 10 different subjects. Kachupa Rinchen Pela. Kadam shepe dun kanyin kadi namar. So Jetsun Kapa asked his student, what do you think is the definition of kadam? How would you describe kadampa? Okay, it's cool, right? It's interesting. Galway kale yike naji kyan dodu runga me par danga tu chawa la ser yin shu. Okay, he said it means if you took all the teachings of the enlightened beings and you took over even a single line out of it, you would never disavow that line, or you would never think that was a waste of time or not relevant to my life. Okay, it's the perception that every single sentence of a spiritual teaching is relevant to your personal situation. That's how he answered Jetsun Kapa, okay? Damgatu Charwa strikes you as relevant to your personal struggle right now, you know, the issues going on in your life today, this week. Every sentence of this teaching should be directly applicable. If they are, then you reach Kadampa. Okay? Jay Rinpoche, Yin Shu. Shu is very beautiful. Yin Shu means he preferred this response. Okay? We don't say to a high lama that I told him. You know, you say, I offered him my words. You know, he offered those words to Jetsun Kapa. Jay Rinpoche, Shinto Nye. What's Shinto? Shinto means a lot, very much. Shinto. I like it because it sounds like what it is, right? Shinto Nye. Nye means he was really pleased by the answer, okay? Shinto Nye Ne, which is really rare with a lama, with your teacher. Gachi ki tsosu yang, tering gachi loke chenpo jinchung. Then he announced in the teaching, today I got a nice teaching from my student. You know, today my student has given me a nice teaching, which itself is a kadampa. Got it? There's something deeper here, right? The teacher is saying, my student gave me an answer, and it sounded to me like the Buddha himself was talking, which is, if you're a real kadampa and you start to teach, you will have this experience constantly, if your heart is open, right, that your students are teaching you all the time. And then you start to wonder who's who, okay? And it's supposed to be like that. I mean, the whole exercise of being a teacher, ultimately, in the end, you realize you were the student all along, okay? So thank you. It's been fun. Dita Ser, She Sungne, I like what he said. Ngak Jutze, he praised him. Okay? Ngak Jutze. Deta Chungna, Tsaka Nangi Shokyal Chik, Tsunje Ki Surab Tamje Kansa Chik Tsangyawe Menga to Shilki Dil. So, you can even begin to see, you begin to see on one hand that every sentence you ever hear in a teaching has its place in the whole flow of a lifetime of spiritual practice. You can position it in the flow of a lifetime of spiritual practice. And I guess if you're a really good Kadampa, you might see the whole flow within that teaching, right? Within that sentence. You should be able to go both ways. We talked about it with the dice, right? And the cushion. Okay, you should be able to see that anything someone says applies to the path as a whole, but you should also begin to have the experience that anything someone says contains the path as a whole. Okay? Deyang rang chikpu sangyawe mengak shilki do. Then he says, he does an interesting thing. He says, anything you learn strikes you as being relevant to the flow of a person's lifetime spiritual practice, right? And then he says, or rather, should I say, my own. Okay. You see? So he says, not third person, you know? Oh, it strikes me as relevant to my own journey, my own lifetime of spiritual practice, okay? De tam je sangye la sokpe, rangkone che du sungba, dabo shik hone, de tam je la kupa yang shintu chenpo kye yong. If you reach a point in Kadampa, and this is where there's a homework question, I think, at this point, and it's a phenomenon we talked about yesterday, and now he mentions it here, you know? Very commonly, in a large teaching, you know, more than a few people in a group, you'll be sitting there in the back row. You go to the Dalai Lama's teaching in Washington, D.C., and you're sitting in the back row of 5,000 people. He's about an inch high. And then he starts off on some, like you had a fight with your boyfriend that morning, and your boyfriend was telling you that you never listen, and that you're always interrupting her. Sorry, him, okay? And you know, he can't get a word in edgewise. And then you're like, no, that's not true. You know, I listen, I'm a pretty good listener. Then you go to the, in the afternoon, you go to the Dalai Lama's teaching, and he gets up there, and they go through the 3 hours of prayers, and then he starts talking, and he says, today, I'd like to talk about not listening to people, you know? And you're like, damn, how did he know, you know? And like, and then you get this weird impression that he's criticizing you directly, and your boyfriend called him before the talk and said, could you first talk about this? Because she'll be sitting in the back row, and you know what I mean? And I wanted to mention the phenomenon because it's considered a high blessing. See, your need, if the person giving the teaching is supposed to be some special being, or if the scripture is some kind of special message from enlightened beings, then 2,500 years ago, Lord Buddha arranged that that sentence would be the first one taught by the Dalai Lama in the talk you went to, because he knew you would need it. Because 2,500 years to an enlightened being is like looking at the palm of your hand. It's nothing for them, okay? So then you start to get this really beautiful appreciation of what it is to be enlightened, you see? A person 2,500 years ago sitting in an Indian village under a tree says something because he knows that on such and such a date in a land called Amegwa, much later, you know, you will be sitting in the last row. And you should appreciate that it was designed for you. You're not crazy. You're not, what's the opposite of paranoia? Huh? Like, everyone's out to help me. You know, okay. Like I'm sitting in a bunch of everyone's enlightened except me, and there's old Geshe Michael. You teach today, huh? You see, like I don't know, benign paranoia. I don't know. It's healthy. It's a good thing. It's probably true. Okay. Anyway, thanks for letting me teach. I enjoy it. Then you will automatically get a greater love and affection for these teachings. You will come to really enjoy them and love them. You say, oh, let me have some more, you know? Maybe he's got something else in there that I was supposed to hear today. Got it? Maybe 2,500 years ago, he had something else in mind for me to hear today. Got it? All right. Nel jopa changchub rinchen ki tangak lan. Nangchen chupani, piupum lakthil tsam shik langepa nyepa lami serki, shurab dhamje dangatu kovala serva yin sumba, yang ditar koga, nangjol pa chanchu rinchenki, dangakla nangchen chupani, piupum lakthil tsam shik langepa nyepa lami ser. So then there was a famous lama. Neljorpa means the Tibetan translation of the word yogi, the yoga practitioner named Chanju Rinchen, he was trying to explain what it meant to receive personal instruction, right? What does it mean to have for a realization to be triggered in your heart by something that is in the scripture? What's happening? Byubum laktil tsam la nyepa nyepa la miser. He said, it's not that you're holding in your hands some rare ancient book of scripture. Bilbum means annals, like analects or annals, okay? Some ancient weird book, okay? It's not that you crack an ancient book and discover its meaning, he says. Sundram tamje damnatu koala ser, to receive personal instruction means that you understand that all the teachings ever given were designed as personal advice for you. Okay? The 200,000, the 10 million pages of scripture in Tibet, or including the Bible and whatever was ever written in any language in this world, anything you've ever heard of, what's his name, Rumi, or doesn't matter, okay? Anything you ever read, you will reach a state in your life where you will appreciate that it was a message sent to you by an enlightened being, okay? Any book you pick up at the airport bookstore and glance at a page and then run to the gate, that page was meant for you. And it was put there in the airport bookstore by an enlightened being for your benefit. Okay? You will reach a point in your life where you will get that. And then you're a Kadampa. Okay? Oh, good. Sikti Ditsavatabuyin. You can consider that the main teaching on this subject. Just that last line about the airport. He says, okay. Deyan suram tanje danga tu chawa ni ne jinda shik ga lamim te pa tsamgi chokam nyamna. How do I get to what do I need exactly to reach Kadampa? Somebody asked him a question. You know, how much do I need to reach Kadampa? Okay, what do I have to do to get to that? To where I can walk into an airport bookstore and see a few lines in a book and it strikes me as meant for me. Okay, what do I need to get there? Lamrim tepatsamgi chokam nyamna. Do I really have to go through this whole book? Okay, do I have to go through the whole Lamrim, or, you know, what's a minimum? Okay. Dani suram gondra dan chepe dun shinyan tensu ne shilaki parki lamrim rimba du. All of that information is included in the various teachings called Lamrim. And some of them are very short. We mentioned one yesterday that's 14 verses. It fits on the single side of a page, right? It doesn't matter whether it's a very long book, like this is one of the longest Lamrims, or it's a very short thing, like a single page Lamrim, like Lamtsum Namtsum, the three principal paths. Kanda chatsam wa shig lo yu du ngepa chene. It doesn't matter how big it is, but you must grasp its contents in full. Okay? If it's 14 verses, you have to understand all 14 verses. I think 14 verses is the record for a Lamrim. And of course, it's held by Jetsun Kampa. Okay? And he did it. He got the whole thing into 14 verses. We translated Pabongka Rinpoche's commentary to that. And I think it's one of the first books we ever printed. I think it was 1979 or something like that. But you can, it's called The Three Principal Paths. So there's a nice commentary by Pabongka Rinpoche on those 14 verses, and that's the shortest you can get. But if you grasp the whole thing, you can reach Kadampa. Okay? If you know the 14 verses well, then you can reach Kadampa. Okay? Nyepa chene, che gom gopala che gom, jokom gopala jokom ki nyanan du kier shepa shik chungna. If you learn to chegom the things that need chegom, and if you learn to jogom the things that need jogom. Got it? So here's an interesting line because it includes a traditional explanation of the different types of meditation. Okay, so our tradition recognizes three different, vastly different types of meditation. Okay, one is called jogom. And that's where you put your mind on a single object and you hold it there. So this morning we were doing kind of a jogam. If you, for example, put a vision of your heart teacher's splendid, beautiful body and being in front of your mind and just sit with them and enjoy being with them, that would be jogam, okay? Chegom means problem-solving meditation. Like somebody says, it's possible to reach a point in your spiritual evolution where you can walk into an airport bookstore, close your eyes, go to a corner, pick out a book, open the page at random, and there will be a message on the third line for you from God. Okay? Then you're like, I don't know about that. You know, I don't know if that really makes sense. I got to think about that. Okay? If you take that statement and tear it down and examine it and debate it in your own mind, that's called Qigong. That's the second kind of meditation. Okay? Qigong. Jogong, single-pointed meditation on a single object. Qigong, work out a problem in your mind. Then Shargong. Shargong means take your mind through a preset series of thoughts and burn a new synapse for it. Okay? We did yesterday in the meditation class, we did 7 steps for warming up in a meditation. Then you might go through them over and over until they become part of you. And that's called Shargom, okay? A new synapse is burned in your mind. Okay? It becomes part of your character or your being. You burn it into your being, okay? So those are the 3. He says, you got to learn to Jogom what you have to Jogom, and you have to learn to Qigong what you have to Qigong, and you got to learn to Shargom what you have to Shargom. You have to learn to Nyamlen Dukyer, how to put it into practice at work with your girlfriend. Shepa Shik Chungna, if you get to that point, Sura Kang Jal Yang Rangi Nyamlanki Mukode Lande Te Soso Ja Cho Cho Yang, then you'll be able to, then you'll reach a point in the Lamrim where anything you hear will be something you can assign to the whole flow of a lifetime of spiritual practice. Chok chok is a nice word, okay? Those of you who are learning Tibetan. Chok chok, you say chok chok. No, you gotta do it right. Chok chok. Chok chok means, I wanna do it right. Chok chok. Sa chok chok re means it's totally ready to eat, just bite. Okay? Chok chok means totally ready. Okay? Sa chok chok means totally ready to eat. Dro chok chok yin. Yeah, I'm ready. I'm totally ready to go. Just let's get in the car, okay? Jar cho cho means totally ready to apply it to my spiritual practice. The last line here says deyang, jok. The last line here has 3 words, jok deyang. You should also meditate single pointedly. So I look at that line, I look at those 3 words. I'm jar cho cho. I can jar cho cho that. I can jar cho cho that. You know, yeah, I can apply that. Yeah, it's talking to me. Geshe Michael, you got to be more focused. He's talking to me. That's Jar Chocho. I'm ready at any moment to apply any 3 syllables from this book to my personal life, okay? Maybe you got too many projects going on, you know? How are you going to do the guardian angel thing? I mean, you're going to get behind, you know? Maybe you are a Joe Chocho, okay? Okay, all right? That means you got to be ready on a moment's notice to apply something to your own life, okay? You go in the store, you catch a little bit of a conversation between 2 people in aisle 3, and you're like, they're talking to me, okay? Like, where's the oatmeal? I don't know. Anyway, Deyang Gode Chir Daki Lama Rinpoche Sung Shin Per Shena. If you want to make this point more easy to understand, we could go to a metaphor that my own dear Lama used to pull out to demonstrate, to illustrate this teaching. Okay. Mi shik la de dang cho dang semo so kanyang mena. If you're a guy who's like in the middle of a famine, all right, and there's no rice, and there's no wheat, and there's no beans, which are the 3 main things in Tibet, okay, next to barley. So then somebody comes up and gives you a teaspoon of, let's say they give you a tablespoon of rice, okay? Okay, you and your family are starving. And someone says, we're delivering aid to you. You know, aid is coming. And you're like, yes, you know. And then some guy knocks on the door and says, I got the package for you. And you're like, okay, let me see. And he holds out a tablespoon of rice. Got the image? And Ye Kyung, Kayan Che Rin Mepa, it's not worth it. There's nothing you can do with it. Okay? Mepe, Dorwale Ume, Dorwale Ume. The only reasonable thing to do with it would be to toss it out. Okay? What the hell you want me to do with a teaspoon of rice? You know, you just, you wouldn't even try to eat it. You just call it, how's this going to help us? You know, and you just throw it. Okay? Ne Ume. De Shindu Lamki Kang Dang Matsangna Surab Jeliang Kangi Tedu Jar Gumi Shepe Nyamsun Len Mi She. Then some people don't go through the whole instruction, okay? They get part 6, or they get part 7, okay? They don't learn the flow. They don't learn the whole, all the steps. They just get a little bit here and a little bit there. He said, just dump it. What's the use, okay? He's not going to be able to use it. Which gets me to a point, okay? One day, Rinpoche gave me this lecture, all right? We were leaning over. This is a cool thing. I mean, if you really want to know. The Dalai Lama's senior tutor is named Kyabje Ling Rinpoche, right? He passed away, and I forget. He came to the United States. I was his driver for a day when I was 26. So, I don't know. It was 1978, okay? And then he passed away. And then, of course, they found his reincarnation, okay? So then, at a certain age, the reincarnation comes to the home monastery, which was Ganden. Jebun? I forget. Anyway, it was Jebun. Anyway, they are installed on the throne, and they become the new incarnation, right? So there's a big ceremony. And there was a lot of, you know, we were in a line of cars that went from the airport to the monastery. It was like 40 miles or something. And it was a huge line of these cheap Indian ambassador cars. In those days, they only made one car in India. So that you could interchange all the parts all through the country. It was a national policy. You couldn't have other cars. So if you broke down on the road, you could just go and take one out of somebody else's car. And so anyway, we're in this long procession, and our car breaks down. Lati Rinpoche is in the car, very high lama from Ganden. And then the thing is smoking and there's water overflowing, you know, and we're all like, oh, dang, you know, and all the other cars pass us and we're not going to make it to the interment. And the driver gets, this Indian driver gets out and he opens up the hood, you know, and all these high lamas are in the car, you know, and me. And they all cluster around the engine, you know. And I'm like, what are you doing? You know, I mean, you don't know anything about a car. You never saw an engine in your whole life. You know, Rinpoche never saw a car until he was about 40 or something at all. And then I'm like, well, you know, what? He says, then they start to ask the driver, what's this thing? You know, that's ignition. What's it do? It starts the car. What's this thing? It's a fan. What's it for? It makes the car cool. And then Lati Rinpoche goes like, it's a cylinder, number 3. You know? Like he just understood. You know? And then they went and stole one or got one. And they replaced it. They replaced it right there on the road. You don't go to a garage. And then we made it to the interim. I mean, they made it. They made me stay in the car. It was like 200 degrees in the car. And they all ran and got in the front row anyway. So anyway, why did I talk about that? Yeah, what was he teaching me? I don't remember. Oh, yeah. It was Ken Rinpoche. Then Ken Rinpoche used to talk about it and say, if you had a car engine and you just took out 2 or 3 parts at random, would it work? Would the engine work? And you got to say no, okay? Like, would it look like an engine? Like, if you took out a couple, well, you can take a piston out, but, you know, if you took out a couple of crucial parts from the inside and just threw them out, Would the engine work? And you say, no. Would it look okay? And then you say, yes. And he said, that's the danger of a lot of different spiritual approaches or techniques, is that they are missing one of the crucial parts. Like, it's a belief in the Tibetan tradition that to reach the goal of your spiritual journey, there are certain parts that have to be there. And if one of them is missing, you will die before you get there. You won't get there. It's just like a car with a crucial part missing. And the teaching can look good. You know, the book can be interesting. It can be sensitive. It can have a lot of good ideas in it. But it's not complete. And it won't work. In the long run, it won't take you where you want to go. If certain parts are missing, you cannot succeed. You will die before you get there, okay? So that's what he's saying about the teaspoon of rice. It's not enough to learn a few of the steps, like to be really good at meditation, but you don't know anything about impermanence, or to be really good at emptiness, but you don't understand the seeds, or something like that. If one of the crucial parts is missing, you won't make it. Okay? That's what he's saying, all right? Jayang, Kangi Te Dajar, Kom Mishe Pe Nyamsa Na Mishe. If you can't, in your mind, picture the whole flow of a lifetime of spiritual practice, what you need to do to get someplace, if you don't have that, a grasp on all the steps you need to get there, then your practice won't succeed. Okay? So you have to have in your mind a general picture of where you need to go and what you need to go through to get there at the beginning. Or you won't make it. Your practice won't make it. You'll die. You'll get old and die, and that'll be the end of it. Okay? Jaydang, Chodang Semo So Tedak Soso Ne If you already have a couple of big jars of rice and beans and what was the other thing? Wheat. And then someone gives you a handful of rice. What do you do? You go open the rice jar and you throw it in and you have a little more rice. You see what I mean? So he's saying, first get everything. And then every new thing you learn from Rumi or from Book of, what's it called? What Book of Miracles or something. Course in Miracles. Yeah, or whatever you hear at we went to a Muslim service in Montreal. And then you can take some wisdom that you got from the Muslim service and you have a place to keep it in the whole flow of your lifetime plan for where you want to go in your life, okay? But first you need the plan. Then you can go shopping and take a little bit out of here and take a little bit out of here and add it in the right places to your program, okay? But you have to have a program. Okay? There's Chokchok again. Chokchok Yopatayin. Same thing with the with your plan for your life's practice, it's like the grain, okay? If you have a plan, then if you go to a yoga class and the teacher makes some inspiring remarks before the class, you have a place to keep them, the treasure. It's like a treasure, right? You can go put them in your, what do you call that? Ladies keep a jewelry box? What do you call it? You keep all your jewelry in there. Like, it's usually a nice wooden box or something, and you go digging around for the other half of those earrings, and, right? So if you have a box, then you have some place to put what you hear in the world from everybody, okay? And you can say, oh, what Jenny said this morning, that's a reminder to me that I need to work harder on step number 3. But you have all the steps ready in your head, and you know where you're going. It's like Google Maps before you take a trip, okay? Like, you got some weird address, you don't just take off. You go online and you get I don't know about you. I go through the whole thing in my head. Like I imagine all the streets and I get it into my head. Then I write it down also, but I don't trust it because I might not have time to look at it. So I have a general knowledge in my head of how to get to the new vision center from Rimrock. And you need that. Okay. Then if Ningbo says it's another 2 miles, I know where to fit that statement into the whole map. Okay. We'll go another few minutes, okay? Then I'll give you a break. This is cute. It doesn't matter if the Lam Rim you study is short or long. It should have all the car parts should be there. All the engine parts should be there. The essential engine parts should be there, okay? The furniture in the mansion of a wealthy nobleman and the furniture in the cell of a solitary monk are both enough, okay? They have, their residence is fully furnished. It doesn't matter which one, you know? Got it? Okay, each residence is fully furnished. And so you can do this 10-year Lam Rim, or you can go to the Casa Jardin in Glendale, where the teachers here are teaching the briefer works, and you can go for a 3-4 day thing, and that's it. You are a monk with all the furniture you need for a small place. Okay, and but it's complete. It's enough. Okay. Let me see again. Tempa tamche gyame di topa dang suram mandu pa danga tu chawa la kipar yang dayin. Okay, I'm going to pose a logic question to you. Okay, this is a typical debate question. Okay. If you grasp the first of the four greatnesses, do you automatically grasp the second? If you realize that all these teachings are internally consistent, do they necessarily strike you as personal advice for your own situation? Good. I don't think so. I think you're correct. What about the opposite? If everything you learn strikes you as personal advice, do you come to appreciate that all those teachings have no internal inconsistency? Good. Yeah, that's the point he went. We say kyaba gochuk. Surkyab nayan parma kyab. It's true this way, but it's not true that way. Got it? Okay. If they all strike you as personal advice, they must be consistent because your life is one life and they all apply to that one life. Okay? But if you have, what was the first one? if you've understood that they are consistent, that doesn't necessarily mean that they have struck you as personal advice for your own situation. So he's just trying to get your mind a little more flexible. And you learn in the monastery to think like that. Does number one imply number two? Not necessarily. Does number two imply number one? Always. Got it? That's cool. You got that easier than I did. Sumba gyawe gomba de la tu nyebe chewana. He has reached the third of the wonderful qualities of this spiritual presentation. I'll give you the name of it, and then we'll take a break, okay? Galway Gomba Delak to Nepa, okay? Galway Gomba Delak, say Galway Gomba Delak to Nepa. Buddhism, I don't know, people ask me sometimes, is it a religion? You know, and people ask me, why are you going out and teaching thousands of business people? Why don't you, have a couple of Buddhist teachings around? And I've come to realize that I view Buddhism not so much as a religion, as a collection of cool ideas. Okay, so for me, it's not so much about worshiping someone or following a certain rituals or things like that. For me nowadays, and in my, I think, mature thinking about Buddhism, it strikes me as a collection of extraordinary ideas that could be shared independently of the traditions which have carried it before. You know, I don't think you have to drink butter tea and eat roasted barley flour to study these ideas, you see, or keep a particular picture on your in your house. I don't see where it matters much anymore. In my life, I don't think it matters much. It's a Buddhism is really, or at least what I was taught, or what you're learning, it's really just a number of car parts, right? Engine parts. It's a bunch of beautiful, exquisite ways of seeing life and ways of understanding how things work that can bring you whatever you want. You know, you want health, you can have health. You want an exquisite relationship with someone, you can get it. You want money? I made a $250 million company, okay, with no business experience. I don't know anything. You can make things happen in life, in your life, that are extraordinary, because those ideas allow you to tweak reality. They allow you to change the course of the future. You can adjust the course of the future. You can change the future if you understand these concepts, right? And you can save the world. You can contribute to the happiness of every person on this planet, okay? To me, it's a collection of ideas like that. It's not a, I don't care whether you accept the Dalai Lama, or I don't care. And I don't care if you think about Tibet or not. I've never been there. And I don't care. It doesn't, all those things don't matter, you know, whether you meditate with your left foot up first or your right foot up, all these things, I don't care. I just like to take those ideas like little candies and spread them around the world, you know, and they help people. And people become extremely happy and successful and peaceful. But to do that, you have to master those ideas. You have to learn them, right? You have to hear them, and then you have to mull them over, and then you have to try them out in your own life. Because people don't listen to what you say, they listen to what you do. You can talk all day, and I am. But in the end, people will watch you, and they will do what you do. People are like children. You can't teach children. You can only be something, and then they will try to be that also, you know? So how do you get into the mind of an enlightened being and sort of pluck those fruits from their head? You see, how do you get into the mind of an enlightened being and into the candy store, like loose in a candy store with a, what do you call it? White, what do you call it when you can spend, you have carte blanche. Yeah, white card. You have carte blanche. You know, here's the key to the candy store. Take what you want. You know, see you tomorrow. And then you're like a kid alone in the candy store and your mom said, we own the store. You can eat, take whatever you want. And then, you know, how do you get into the mind of an enlightened being to pluck the things you want? You know, how do you get carte blanche? Learn this. Learn the Lam Rim. Because there are teachings about how to enter the mind of an enlightened being and pluck what you want. Okay, got it? There's a system. There's a method to getting into the mind of an enlightened being. There's like a combination to the safe. And then you can go in and just take what you want. Okay. So the next great quality of this tradition of teaching is that it gives you the skill set to break into the vault of an enlightened being's mind. Okay? Got it? It's a beautiful idea, right? Okay, so we'll do that after the break. Okay, well, I thought we'd do some question and answer. We have like 20 minutes. And in the afternoons, I thought to pep you up, maybe we would do some questions and answers. If you don't have any, I'll just do more scripture. But I felt like, I don't know, sometimes a lot of beautiful things come out for everybody's sake. So anybody have a question? And please, do you have a mic that works? Okay, please speak into the mic. This is not speaking into the mic, you see? You hold it right up to your mouth and ask a question. Then everybody can hear.
I wanted to ask it this morning during the meditation question and answer. I was wondering if there's a scriptural definition for the present moment. Because definitions are always very helpful. And
okay. Is there a scriptural definition of what the present moment is? One thing to repeat is that there's a teaching in the Abhidharma Kosha, right? You've heard the word Dharma Dhatu, right? And there's a teaching in the Abhidharma system which says that we are always a millisecond behind, right? It's like when we don't get the light from a star for 300 years or something before, like the star might be gone before the light reaches the earth. It's the same with what someone says to you, right? Your ear picks it up. The eardrum vibrates. It's transmitted to the audio nerve. It goes through your jaw. It reaches your mind. By the time you process it, the original words are finished. You're living a moment in the past. But it's so short a time, I don't think it really matters much. It's useful to explain certain parts of your consciousness. So that's one part of the answer. The other part of the answer is where they get into the answer of your question about what is time or what's the definition of the present moment is treated in Madhyamika, right? Middle way, the highest of the schools of ancient India. And the debate is, are the three times things? Is the future and the past and the present a thing? And then you say, yes, they are an existing object, right? They are an object. Then the question comes up of, are they unchanging or are they changing, right? What would you say? Yeah. Are they momentary in their nature? Anybody agree? No, I mean time is passing. Yeah. Time keeps on flowing into the future. That's before your time. That's Steve Miller. No, it changes. Which means that it does something. Does the past function? Does Lincoln's assassination affect you? No. Yeah, it does. I mean, or the attack on Pearl Harbor, or the fact that Gaddafi was murdered 2 weeks ago or something. These are, these events that still affect us. So according to scripture, they are functioning things. That means they exist in the present because they affect the present. You can't take something which is gone already and say, it changed my life. You see, if it changes your life, it means it must be there somehow to change your life. So the higher schools recognize that past, present, and future could be considered functioning things and in a sense present. Existing in the present, because the past affects you, and what's gonna happen on your credit card bill is also stressing you. You see what I mean? So right? So it's a very interesting. The higher schools say that you could see the present as including the past and future, because they are functioning in the present. Then in that sense, they agree with a school called Sarvastivadin. So Sarvastivadin is the particular lineage, I think it's 18 lineages of Vinaya that we follow, okay? So Tibetan monks are all one of 18 groups of monastics that existed in ancient India, and we're all Sarvastivadin. Sarvastivadin means, Vadin means they say, Sarva means everything, Asti means is. They say everything is school. The they say everything is school. Is what we are. That's where our monastic tradition has derived from. And the other schools like Nyokpa or like that, they have different, slightly different vows for monks. So we are following a certain tradition of ancient India, ancient Indian monasticism, which is called they say everything is. And what they say everything is time. They say the past and the present and the future all exist now. Okay. So in that way, a very low school, which is an Abhidharma school, right? Vinaya school. They are agreeing with the higher school, and the two middle schools don't agree with them. Okay, so it's a very rare thing. Why they say the past and present and future exist now is a different reason, right? But it's an interesting thing. Okay, so you have to study time. Like mind-only school would say that the past doesn't exist anymore, because it's gone, and the future is yet to come. Okay, then you get into the present, right? How big is the present moment? Does it have a front end and a back end? Is part of the present moment closer to yesterday, and part of the present moment is closer to tomorrow? It would have to be, otherwise it would have no duration. If you could not divide that time into a beginning of the present moment and an end of the present moment, it could have no duration. And then you couldn't experience it. You see, it must have a length, however short. The present must have a length. The present moment must have a length to it, even if it's tiny, because there must be a part of it which is closer to yesterday and a part of it which is closer to tomorrow. If it didn't have that, and you closed it to a single point, it would have no duration, and you couldn't perceive it. You wouldn't feel time, because it would be too, it would be no length. So in the highest schools, you can examine time. If you want a definition of time, check this out, okay? Present moment has to be a point in time. A point is a mathematical idea, it has no reality. There cannot be a point observable, because you couldn't, it would never be a point, it would always be a stick, because it would have to have a beginning and an end. So it would be a point that was squished out into an oval. You see what I mean? So you cannot be perceiving present moment in Madhyamika. In the highest school, it's not possible that you are perceiving a present moment, because it would have to have duration, and then part of it would be in the past or the future. Huh?
Is it not the same argument?
Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah. There's no such thing as a present moment. There cannot be such a thing. If it had no duration, you couldn't perceive it. If it had duration, part of it would be in the past or the future. It's not possible that you are perceiving a present moment. Okay. But you are, right? So it can't be, it can't have an external reality. It must be coming from your mind. That's another proof for karma. It's just another proof for karma, okay? What you perceive as a present moment is coming from you. And there's no present moment out there. So in the highest school, the definition of time would be anything your karmic seeds convince you is time. Okay? No problem? Next question. By the way, I'm not just making fun. It's a very serious question. By the way, the fact that time is coming from your karmic seeds, and you know that time can be stretched, right? Time spent at the dentist and time spent kissing your girlfriend have much different duration, right? I'm not just making fun. I mean, it's a serious question. Time is, what are you calling? Malleable. It can be longer or shorter. You can experience time as longer or shorter because it's coming from your own mind. Why is it relevant to us? Why do we spend time thinking about the nature of time? If you want to be truly helpful to people, they say if you wanted to be a supreme physician, who's the supreme physician? It's like Lord Buddha, okay? Why? If you walked into a doctor's office and they could see forward into the future and see which medicine cured you and look back in time and see which candy bar you ate 6 years ago that caused you to be sick right now, right? Then that would be a perfect doctor. They wouldn't be guessing about what hurt you, you know, or what caused your current kidney stone or something. They would see in the past what you ate that caused it, and they would see into the future of what would help, right? If time exists around us, then we couldn't change it. If time is malleable, or what do you call it? If time can be longer or shorter, depending on who you're with, right? That's an indication that it's coming from you, okay? And that it doesn't have an external reality. Given that information, that time is coming from you, you could change how you perceive time, and you could see the past and the future. You could come to see the past and the future if you learn to meditate well, and you can. And it's a wonderful thing. It's an amazing thing. And we're not, you see, then the limits are, I'm not talking tomorrow. I'm talking 500 years, 1,000 years out. If you could sit in the Monte Lucia Hotel's refrigerator and see 500 years out, wouldn't it be an extraordinary experience? I mean, that would convert you to whatever we're doing, and it does, okay? So, because that time is coming from you, therefore you can perceive. You can have a vision of what's happening in 500 years. And then how do you relate to a person who is acting on a 500-year lead time? You know, how do their actions look to you with a half a millisecond lead time? You see, you're stuck in a closet. They're walking on the Gobi Plateau. You know, they have a completely different set of values and reasons for doing what they do, because they are seeing 500 years ahead or 1,000 years ahead, okay? So you have to be careful with, you know, with your own teacher or whoever you're, you know. You have to be careful judging what they do and why they do things, because they may be acting on a much different set of values based on, not on any of the countries that exist right now, for example, okay? Okay, and another question.
So since I was a child in meditation, I've always been taught to let thoughts come and then release them. And this morning in step 3 of our meditation, you talked about trolling our thoughts.
Yeah.
Can you reconcile that or help me understand?
Yeah, okay. A lot of schools of meditation which are being taught in the world today, and I've been trained in them, okay, many years ago in Burma from Burmese master. Okay, so in the southern countries, Burma, Sri Lanka, Thailand, Ukjumut, right? Watching your breath and the present moment meditation. They were very popular. What I'm trying to say is the instructions weren't complete when they went to those countries. Buddhism in Thailand, Burma, Sri Lanka is very late. It's only 300 years old in Thailand, for example. It's only in the 1700s that Buddhism was translated into Thai language. And I helped with the computerization of it at Mahidol University in Bangkok, so I know. And it was partial. They only got partial. So there have developed schools of meditation which only do those two meditations. You watch your thoughts and you let them go and you don't try to control them. That's a preliminary. That's like sun salutation, surya namaskar, right? It's just a warm-up to the main thing, you see? You eventually have to learn to modify your thoughts, because right now they are random, and you have to learn to direct your thoughts. So it's important, and it is a traditional meditation to watch your thoughts and not mess around with them. And then later, you're trained further to, I prefer not to call it controlling your thoughts. I would say to select an object of meditation consciously, which will have a major effect on your consciousness. You see, you select certain objects, which when placed before the mirror of your mind, change that mirror. You see, like you put an object in front of your mind, and then the mind reflects it like a mirror, you see? So after we observe the mind for a while, then we select an object which is a liquid which is highly volatile. You pick a volatile object to place it before the mirror of the mind to be reflected in the mind, because it gets embedded in the mind. So you select certain objects of high spiritual power, and you learn to focus the mind on those. And that involves directing the random thoughts, you see? To bring the mind to that object, you have to learn to corral your thoughts towards that object. So it's not like an exercise in wrestling with your mind. It's an exercise. You don't really fight them and block them. You kind of ride them. And you kind of say, wouldn't you like to think about, stopping hunger in the world? And then you take those random thoughts and on an ellipsis, you coax them towards a thoughts that are uplifting and important thoughts. And then your mind changes. The nature of your mind changes. So that's an initial step, which came to be a whole tradition because the whole instructions didn't get to those countries. Okay. All right. Okay, especially the breathing meditation. It came to be a whole story in itself, but it was only the warming up the car. It wasn't going anywhere. Okay, so, yeah. Okay. One more from the back, and then we have to stop.
You've been speaking about Kadampa for the last few days, and I'm wondering if there's a relation between that and something that I've heard you speak in the past about, which is calm.
Like
And I want to know if there's if they happen at the same time, or if the experience of Kadam kind of is a prelude to discovering the calm.
Yeah, okay. So there's a Tibetan idea called calm. And calm means your hidden talent. Or, I always, when I hear the word calm, I think of a vein of silver or gold coursing through a large boulder, okay? So it's like inside the boulder. It's like those geode things, right? Like on the outside, you don't see anything, and then you break it open, and there's all these crystals inside. So calm is like that. So every person has inside of them, from their past lives, certain talents, hidden talents, and great mastery of certain things. I met a guy in Tokyo. He's from Sweden. He's a very beautiful man. We're the same age. He's 50-something. And then I, you know, we were kind of bonding because we realized we were born within a month of each other. And then I said, well, you know, what's your story? How'd you get to Tokyo? Why do you live in Tokyo? And he said, well, I was the head of American Airlines sales in New York for 20 years, you know, in the whole United States. He was the manager. So I said, okay, you've had a corporate life. I can appreciate that, you know. And then I said, but how did you get to Tokyo? You know, what's that got to do with Tokyo? And he was kind of shy. And then he said, well, from the time that I was 17, I've been a Japanese sword master, you know. And I'm like, whoa. And then I found out he's really pretty well known at it, you know, and he cracks people's heads open with swords and stuff. And his whole life, 40 years, he's been a sword master. And so he found his calm. That would be calm. Calm means, for some reason in Sweden, he bumped into a Japanese sword fighting teacher when he was 17. And he's been doing it ever since. Very well, extremely good at it. And he found his calm. He bumped into his calm, you see? And we all have calms like that inside of us. And part of the purpose of this teaching and the retreat is to try to find, you know, your Japanese sword master calm that you don't know about. You, like, you feel sort of dissatisfied sometimes, you know, like, I think there's something great in my life that I was supposed to do. Or I'd like to be like that guy, you know, to find that special thing that he's really good at. And that's the purpose of these teachings. We're going to try to help you find it, okay? It may be something really miraculous and wonderful, okay? So that's calm. And then kadampa is a little bit different. Kadampa means stuff happens to you. Incoming missiles. What do you call? What do they call it in the military? They just call it incoming. Yeah. They say incoming and you duck and you hold your head or, you know. They say incoming means a missile. Artillery is coming down on you, you know, and you jump and you hide under something, okay? So incoming means stuff is incoming at you, right? Stuff comes to you. People say things. You see things on the internet. You read things on the headlines. You pick up a book in a bookstore and you see something, right? The experience of that striking you as personal advice from a divine source is kadampa. Okay, so I think we can do that both ways thing. If you have kadampa, do you have calm? You have a calm for that. Okay, so you can say that a kadampa is one calm, right? If you have calm, do you have kadampa? Not necessarily. Okay, if you're a Japanese sword master, it's not necessarily the case that, you know, when you're on the subway and see a sign in Japanese, it strikes you as personal spiritual advice. Okay, got it? So you can always play that game with two ideas to see if they are kyaba go tsung. We call kyaba go tsung in Tibetan. Does the kyaba go both ways? Is it true that it's, if it's a calm, it's a, if it's a calm, is it necessarily a kadampa? No. If it's a kadampa, is it necessarily a calm? Yes. Because if that happens to you, you must have a calm for it. Got it? It may not be your only calm. Okay, if the sword master gets personal advice, he has two comms. Got it? Okay, all right. Let's do a mandala. Darcy, you ready?
Sangye Shindu Mingte Uwagi Rokun Namda Shingla Jubasham Inangura Radhananda Niyadayami Tike Oka Sanami Shetso Sokshi Salam yeshe le chuwe Dambha kuni toba shu